The Cybersecurity and Compliance Podcast with Craig Petronella. Learn about the most current IT security threats in ransomware, phishing, business email compromise, cybercrime tactics, cyber heist schemes, social engineering scams, as well as hints and tips from leading professionals to help you prevent hackers from penetrating your network and dropping ransomware or malware payloads. This podcast will arm you with the best info to defend your network against the latest cybercrimes. Don't forget to like and subscribe. And now, here's your host, Craig Petronella.
So welcome, everybody, to another episode of the PTG podcast. Unfortunately, Craig will not be with us today. He is actually out for the week. He's spending some time with his family, fortunately for him. So today, it's going to be myself, Aaron. We also have Blake and BJ. And then we have a special guest who will hopefully be becoming a regular on the show. We have Dwight. He is our oldest, newest tech, but I don't mean old as in age. So he worked at PTG a while ago. Now he's back again. So Dwight, do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I've worked for Petronella before back in 2010. So this is my second engagement. And basically, I come professionally from a systems administrative role, and I've been doing that now for the past 30 years. So I've worked for a myriad of different companies, mostly managed service providers throughout North America, actually throughout the world. And I have a glass half full mentality. So I try to keep that out in front all the time. And I like technology and working with people.
Yeah, welcome back. We're definitely glad to have you here.
Thank you.
So you're long before our time here for sure. Tell us what it was like to work for PTG back then. I'm sure a lot's changed, obviously.
The company was relatively new because Craig's been in business now for 20 years, going from a break fix at the time to a managed service provider type of perspective. And there was a lot of work. A lot of the customers back then that I see now, so they stuck around. PTG has been doing a good job. Otherwise, they wouldn't still be there. I remember the demands worked were really heavy at the time, a lot of after-hours stuff. But the best thing was, and Craig, I found very easy to work with, very understanding. If you put your time, he never micromanages. It was just a great guy to work for. That's why I came back second time.
Again, welcome. We are very glad to have you.
Certainly glad to have you back.
Glad to be back.
So today, BJ found an interesting article for us to talk about where a cybersecurity analyst stole nearly $600,000 in cryptocurrency from a client. That's a lot of money.
Which is exactly how you don't stay in business for 20 years as a cybersecurity firm.
Exactly. I think if we were stealing crypto from our clients, it would already be known by now, would be my guess.
So yeah, this is an interesting space, cybersecurity.
It's very important to not only get a trusted cybersecurity partner vetted, but also to start to try to bridge that gap of understanding, each man and woman themselves, to try to understand cyber a little better since we're so reliant upon it.
Yeah, and getting people familiar with the different acronyms so they don't feel name shock too, because IT has a way of evolving all these new acronyms and names. So put a more human name to it.
Why don't we jump right into that? Because that's something near and dear to my heart, Dwight, because I'm firmly of the viewpoint that some of this stuff is too complicated. A lot of the names that are used, it's the same thing with science and technology, engineering and math, all kind of fit that same problem. Some of the lingo and the names applied to everything is where a lot of the confusion stems from. Since you have such an extensive background in IT, I think this is a great time for us to dive right in and start to remove some of that murkiness.
Sure. Let's take that. Cyber refers to space or something that's virtual. So basically what we're thinking about is anything that's connected to the internet or outside of your space. It would be your internet connection, remote services that you're using for work. It could be home related, but because we're a business, we're speaking mostly to the business world. And then everything connected between the two. Fancy word for internet connectivity and connected devices that are virtual, not on premises. They might be at another data center, but you connect remotely to them from your home or from your business. I think that would simplify things for our listeners.
I'm sitting here myself personally after hearing you say that, just dumbfounded. I'm like, why am I almost 44 years old and I've never heard it explained simply like that?
You do have a really great way of doing that, Dwight.
Yeah, this stuff is too confusing for people. And that's a perfect way to explain what all this is. Everyone's using this term metaverse now, but no one's realizing that we've been using this virtual cyberspace, hyperspace for all this time, you know?
And it keeps things simple. I call a lot of it that stuff geek speak. That means that only in the IT world, there's even I have a difficult time with these new acronyms and names that come out. I got to think, well, okay, what are they referring to? So it's challenging for even us IT people, let alone for just business owners and just regular employees that have to use the technology, it can be confounding to them, especially management too. Management got the business of running a business. They don't have the time or inclination probably to learn all this stuff. Usually we go to a boss, just tell me what it means in real terms, bottom line. Then you got to be able to convey that to them. And I have lots of experience doing that because you have to speak to customers at their level of understanding.
Yeah. Where do the complicated terms come from?
I don't think somebody does it intentionally, but some people just don't think about when they're coming up with new acronyms. I think IT is constantly trying to evolve itself and come up with new things. Most of the stuff that people speak about nowadays, cybersecurity, I call it best practices. Security in general is just best practices. Password strength, don't stick your password on a sticky note, put it on your monitor, don't put it on your keyboard. I call it good hygiene. That's what lot security is. It's just common sense approach to what you can do in your environment to prevent people from getting information and or getting into things. For instance, looking at your email, for instance, phishing, they can have policies and they can do a lot. End user training is very important for companies to do. Especially nowadays with all the fraud that's happening out there, people have to be educated. Once they're educated, that empowers them, and then they don't feel so daunted and panic whenever they see something. Because now everybody's ringing the bell, right? Cybersecurity, phishing, fraud, companies losing money, people losing jobs. So it scares a lot of people to get people more comfortable with that environment. You have to empower them, give them some knowledge and say, okay, I've seen this before. I know what this looks like. I can address this here on my own. I think we mentioned that earlier today. And I think that's important because if people are not comfortable when they hear about stuff, they either put their head in the sand or they panic or whatever the case may be.
That's a really good point. And another point too, Dwight, I remember it was probably back in 2008, 2009, something like that. I lived in Portland, Oregon at the time. And my boyfriend at the time was super into computers, still is as far as I'm aware. But he let me borrow his computer and I borrowed it. And then I probably downloaded a virus on it or something. I don't know. But after he got it back for me, he was like, yeah, these things aren't working. I think you probably downloaded something you shouldn't have or clicked on something. And I was like, I didn't do that. I would never do that. But now looking back at it, yeah, I probably did because how was I supposed to know? I had no idea. I didn't know how tricky these little hackers were. It was really eye-opening to learn all their different tactics.
Yeah. What's eye-opening too is to see how advanced some of the tactics are getting. If you picture the two ends of the spectrum, the hackers are getting so sophisticated with how they attack. And then on the other end of the spectrum, it's really shocking to me to see just how careless people still are. On social media, you see an abundance of links being shared and people click them just freely. And I'm like, whoa, what are you doing?
Now that we know, it's definitely scary. What are you doing? One of my friends, she has this friend who has now twice moved states to be with somebody she met online and she got catfished both times. It's sad though. It's like, how do you not see that this person is clearly trying to scam you? I don't know. Maybe they'll start doing that. Maybe they'll start teaching basic cybersecurity in high school and maybe even middle at a young age.
Yeah, that would be a really good idea. A lot of things that you wonder why they don't teach in school. The benefits of yoga, for example, but I never heard about them until I became an old lady.
You're not an old lady. If you're old, that means I'm old. You're not old, BJ. No, but yeah, that is a good point. Maybe they will start doing that. I feel like you have to. I remember taking typing classes. That was a long time ago now, but you just wonder when they're going to start. They're probably slow to change a curriculum and things like that. It's really not going to keep up, is it? We need to do a better job. Teach those children not to get scammed.
With the rise in computer usage and things like that, they would teach basic cybersecurity courses in high school or coming up. I know that they would teach computer graphics. We had a computer education course. They were teaching us basic HTML. And the teacher was absolutely terrible. She didn't know anything about HTML. So whenever something happened or she needed some advanced feedback, she would call me up and I would come up and help her. It was just a teacher. I think they just got appointed the responsibility because she may have not been a good math teacher or something. But anyways, you think that that would be something super useful that they should teach, like basic cybersecurity, how to use a computer, how not to get hacked or how not to be compromised.
Yeah, like I said, sometimes it just takes a while to catch up. It's just a lot of red tape. I would imagine. But I guess you think about it too. It's hard to find a cybersecurity person just in general. So I imagine finding a cybersecurity teacher that actually knows what they're talking about would also be difficult, but it would probably be smart, especially because there's computers at school and, you know, they have internet access.
I think there's a lot of teachers. Going back to defining cybersecurity, there's lots of people that have good IT hygiene. So I guess once you break cyber down into basically, it could be a security administrator, security analyst, or something like that. That's more the names now. Systems administrators are also cyber security specialists too, because that's a part of their job. And a lot of the IT guys don't like educating people, or they don't like doing that type of thing. But I think there's quite a few out there that do, and they educate their internal workforce or internal employees and staff. And also then they probably would do meetings with clients too, upon their request to do it. Not all people are like that, but I think there's a fairly good balance out there in the IT world from what I've experienced that are willing to educate people.
There is a stereotype, obviously, with IT guys of being notoriously grouchy, but I don't think that's always the case. Dwight, like we were just saying now, you are really good at breaking things down and explaining it in ways that we can understand it. So I think that's awesome. Maybe you should be a high school teacher. Yeah,
but that's a funny thing to say, Erin, too, about IT guys being so grumpy, because probably a lot of people have felt that way. But if you think about it, there's probably a large degree of frustration on the part of IT people, right?
It has to be annoying.
Yeah, because that gap of understanding is so big between IT guys and non-IT people that after a while, it has to just probably be really wearing on the nerves, I would assume.
I would imagine as well.
Maybe you could tell us about that, about why it is that IT guys become so grumpy.
I think a lot of it is the workload too, right? So that can be a major impact on guys. And then some people just don't have the personality. I have a friend that I went to college with who is like a super brain. You could give him a trig question or trigonometry or a math problem or a business problem. And he just sit there in front of like a couple seconds or a minute or two, and he could put it together in his head. So here's the solution, and write it out just like that. Now, on the personal side, he had poor social skills. He was more of a recluse. So we have those personalities. Companies need those guys because they're on the bleeding edge and they're just so good with math and logic. But he would have a difficult time conveying stuff to a class. He evolved as a person. I remember when he was younger, he was that. Now he's working with IBM higher up now. So I'm sure he's evolved because he had to get social skills. But a lot of people don't have the social skills. That's what it is. So those are developed. So that would be the big factor. And then, like I said, workload. Some people are just overworked and they don't look at end user training as a priority in their world. And that's why some of them are grumpy or uncooperative.
People do the same thing. And it's different people doing the same thing over and over again, though. And you're like, just don't click on a link or whatever it is that they do. And you're like, just don't do that. Does that factor into it sometimes?
Yeah, too. That's what it comes down to, I think, when any company or business is to have an acceptable use policy that all users have to contend with. And that may involve training, too, and stuff that's required, like you could say, about a new employee coming on board here. You have to complete these courses. And these are critical things to the functionality for your role and for the business in general. And then once you sign off on those things, then the company thinks that you understand and you know what you have to do in these circumstances. And then a user has to take responsibility, or an employee, you have to take responsibility for your environment. So personal responsibility, proper education. And then if somebody steps outside that, say if it's a company, and you say you've had repeated times where this particular user, and I've seen this, where a repeated user messes stuff up from a phishing attack or whatever, and they knew what to do, then they have to be dealt with by the company. And it's not that they're indifferent to the company, but you have to set a boundary, right? When you do it once, okay. You do it twice, that's not so okay. If you do it three times, you're out the door.
Right.
So personal responsibility, your function as an employee, you have to have a certain level of autonomy. I think all businesses now are looking towards that. They want their employees to own their workspace. And it's not hard. It's not difficult. If it's given to people properly, the thing is you have to give them proper education. So you can't put step three before step one, and you have to order it out nicely, especially if these people are like an accountant. Some accountants are good with IT, some are not. Depends, you know, what their background is. So how do we deal with all these people? Well, then you speak to them as if they don't understand it or they have no knowledge of what you're talking about. So you keep it low, you keep it simple, and you use step one or checklist. Checklist one, checklist two, checklist three. Everybody can follow a checklist.
Yeah, very good point. I like your Zen way of going about IT. I think that's fantastic. And I personally haven't had a lot of problems with like IT people being grouchy. I just know that that's a bit of a stereotype.
I think you consider those factors into most IT people are very open to help. Most people are very professional, very cooperative, want to help. And like I said, if these mitigating factors like overworking and what their expectations are and basically defining their role and what they may or may not be called on to do are established up front, and then they just adapt to their environment. But like I said, some companies don't. They have this I call it dysfunctional IT family or business in general, where nobody knows what the right hand is doing. Everybody's kind of off doing their own thing. That can be a real challenge that way too. It's about team environment, having a positive atmosphere and wanting to make the company and its environment the best that you can contribute.
I've seen too with some companies in Raleigh, they have maybe about 10,000 plus employees and they have 4 IT guys. One of our clients, I think, gave maybe 4 or 5 IT guys. So things like that, I think, can obviously lead to grouchy IT guys.
That's a good point because people don't understand the complexity of what IT even is, even to lay a network and to network all the computers together in an office and to get it all working. Just that right there is a ton of work.
Not only that too, maybe I can speak for myself, but IT is not sexy. Jokes aside, all the people that I know that I went to high school with, they're in finance or they're going to be doctors or airplane pilots. I was reading an article in the 40s and 50s, being an airplane pilot was the most prestigious role that you could have. So there's a shortage of good IT workers. There's just not enough of us.
Yeah, there is a shortage. I think I might have even done an article on this, but trying to really get people more into IT and cybersecurity because there's not enough of you guys around.
Because there's such a shortage in IT, they had to create a business model that can support customers. For example, I know some ISP that have a staggered help desk where they have a tier 1, tier 2, and tier 3. So tier 1s are literally just hands for hire, people that know how to use a keyboard. And they're giving basic instructions as to, hey, here's how you troubleshoot. Here's how you do this. Here's how you do that. And then anything beyond turning the device on and off, they submit it to tier 2. And then tier 2 is a guy that knows a little bit about basic IT. Or maybe he's worked at the help desk at tier 1 for a certain period of time. He has some tenure, yada, yada, yada. And if he can't do it, then tier 3. And then if tier 3 can't do it, then it gets to somebody like Dwight, who's like, okay, why am I working on this? Because there's such an overwhelming demand for IT and support that they have to stagger it this way.
That's true. And right now, I think across the globe in general, IT is a very taxed environment right now. We've got a lot of burnout going on. We've got a lot of people even leaving the industry because of this past couple of years, overtime and a demand. Moving to a virtual environment, well, the demands have increased, I would say, double on internal corporate IT, if not more. So that's a big factor.
So hold on, I guess maybe I didn't get the clarity that I needed. Virtual environments and working from home or people that are using virtualization?
Virtual environment, or I would say work from home environment. Maybe that's a better terminology to use. People have been pushed out of the office to work from home. So people have gone to work from home, and that poses a major IT workaround because most times, most companies that deal with VPNs and stuff like that is for mobile users. It's only for a few users and it's configured for that purpose and for that amount of people. So now all of a sudden you're going from maybe 10 users in a company of say 100 to 85 or more users. And so basically you have to look at issues like company bandwidth, right? So internet bandwidth. And what is the internet bandwidth? Well, basically it's the pipe, your business pipe, like your internet pipe. So for all of a sudden now, everything's flowing nicely. Now we have 85 users and the connections are slow, they're dropping. So you have to upgrade your bandwidth in the office. Also, internal resource usage goes up too. It might be on your internal SharePoint, on your internal remote desktop server. And so all these factors then all of a sudden are kind of hitting at one time. So because basically it was like, okay, everybody's got to stop coming to the office. It wasn't triple thing or trickle effect where we can do it over time. It was a dead stop and everybody had to stay home. And then people are sent out pieces of hardware. So the IT department's trying to manage all this different stuff. So if people are getting requisitions for new hardware is going out. A lot of times there was not enough time to prep the new laptops and all that stuff to their employees. A lot of stuff had to be done manually, remotely. So that poses a challenge as well. A lot of people that were working from home, they're not actually in the city. So they have very poor internet service. Maybe they're out on a farm or maybe they're out in the country somewhere where they don't have a great internet service provider. That poses multiple levels of complexity. And then, of course, having to work around all that stuff.
That was probably the hugest IT boom. I think it was probably January of 2020, maybe. Once COVID hit, snapping their fingers within a matter of seconds, people were like, okay, the offices are shut down. What do? Everybody's working from home. How do we transition into this as quickly as possible? People that weren't prepared for it.
And that's the way it happened. It was a dead stop. Everything stopped at the way it was, and it's probably never going to be back to normal. And I would say from my observations that things remote work now is a very popular thing. A lot of people like the freedom. I haven't spoken to very many people who don't like working from home.
Yeah. In my generation, I'm 31. So I'm never going to an office again.
I think I got my first work from home job. I worked for a nonprofit credit counseling agency, and they sent me home maybe 8 months after I started working there. And then I worked from home for 4 years and I got laid off. And let me tell you, going back into the office was a challenge. After 4 years of working from home, it was not fun. We had a small IT department. We might have only had one person, actually. But she was really good and she's made sure that everything was set up properly. But whenever we went home, it took time to be able to do that because they had to make sure everything was set up and all this stuff. I remember we wrote a lot of blog articles on that too when it first happened, because that was a big concern that everybody was going to go home really quickly and nobody was going to be prepared. And the hackers know this, obviously, and obviously that hackers also have no shame. So of course, they're going to try to use that to take advantage of whatever vulnerabilities that they can. I really think they did. They did a really good job. There was a big increase in 2020 and 2021 of hacks successful.
They seized on the opportunity for sure. And of course, criminals do. It's just in general, one, they had the riots in all the state and all the different cities across the U.S. People just smash and grab, right? So same deal, same thing.
Not only that too, but immediately COVID was ravaging through China and a lot of the networking equipment was made in Asia or abroad. And obviously those factories have been shut down and then boom, COVID hit here. So not only was there an immediate demand for how to secure home networks, but a shortage of actual networking equipment.
That was a big old mess. It's just like ripe for it to be taken advantage of.
When criminals see opportunities, they're opportunistic, right? They're just like salespeople. They see an opportunity and they go for it. So they have a different mindset than us normal people will, but they see an opportunity to say, oh yeah, oh, okay, I'll just set up a website. And it all looks legit and everybody's feeling so sympathetic. And then they send money to this fund or whatever. So they prey on that. And that's always been that way and it always will be. And it's just now moved into the internet realm as opposed to getting flyers and brochures in the mail and stuff like that.
Speaking of opportunistic, I literally was just on the podcast and I posted it in our team's chat, but somebody sent me a text message saying, oh, log into your T-Mobile account. Da, 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 da. And of course, once the first thing you do is you get an auto text message or you try the word stop because you don't want it to keep coming. And then next thing you know, a blue bubble pops up because I have an iPhone. So it was sure enough an iMessage. And then I just said, I couldn't help but laugh. I was like, this is the worst scam attempt I think has ever been tried on me. And then I just was like, yeah, first of all, I don't even have T-Mobile. And then all of a sudden I get a red message that they read my text message. Come on, guys. Get more creative if you're trying to scam me.
You got to understand there's nothing free, only probably getting a cold or a flu. When does that flash of sign comes up free? There's always some conditions to it, especially if they're in the digital world or the paper world or whatever.
It's a hard thing to understand that your data is worth so much money. Your data is everything to Facebook and Google and Microsoft.
Yes, it really is, which is kind of sick in a way because your data really defines you as a person. So it's kind of like owning the person because your data truly does define you.
We could literally lead into that, but there's a Netflix thing. I can't remember what it was called, but I can look it up again. They were talking about how your data can tell you everything you need to know about you, your persona, and they can influence you in your buying habits and your patterns and in the way that you feel politically about a certain political candidate or this or that or whatever. They can influence a lot of the decisions that you make on a day-to-day basis based upon the data points that they have on you. I can't remember how many points it was. It was like 5,000 data points or I don't even know, something crazy.
It's just so creepy to think that they do that. It's the same thing when you're talking to somebody, like I'll be talking to my boyfriend or I'll be talking to somebody and all of a sudden you open up Facebook and the very thing that you're talking about is right there in your ad and you're just like, this is so creepy.
A whole nother aspect to that is there's an old quote that says, the pen is mightier than the sword. And the danger in this, in the owning of data, is that if people are having epiphanies out there in the wild and they're posting these on their social media, this literally gives the people that, air quotes, own the data, the ability to steal those ideas.
I had a company, I was doing a contract for a company, and they got hit with a phishing attempt. And the way they had their Office 365 environment and their accounting and their bank all set up is there was no call from any kind of a officer from the company. So if someone had the proper permissions internally on all their software, their accounting and their bank and whatnot, their bank accounts, unless there was a stop that said, no, somebody has to verify transactions from the branch, I guess they were trying to streamline things, make things mostly as automated as possible. They lost $1 million. Somebody took $1 million out of their bank account and transferred it to a Chinese no-name company. And all in the matter of a couple hours after a phishing attempt, someone got permissions. They got a global administrator account in their Office 365, went into all their other stuff, changed stuff, passwords and whatnot, banking information, got legitimate information to answer to security questions. Boom, $1 million gone.
How did they answer the security questions?
They got into their banking system, their online banking system. Their business was using. I don't understand why they didn't have some kind of a phone call, or did they even change the 2FA? So they had 2FA on, but they got in and changed all that stuff. Well, they had 2FA on for, they didn't have it on for Office 365. They had it on for the banking information or something. Anyway, I can't remember all the particular details, but this guy or this person was able to circumvent all this stuff. Anyway, and they did lose $1 million. It was set up improperly internally with their all the different integrations that they had. And so the bank even said after, I think, that if you had a verification process was involved, a callback to the business to speak to a specific person, then this never would have happened.
Coinbase has been having a lot of things like that happen where there's people that have lost over $1 million. Like, I think somebody even lost $13 million once, and it was the same thing. To me, that sounds like an inside job. That's just where my mind goes. But maybe it's not. I guess their security could just be that lacking.
Well, there's thieves everywhere. There's lots of stories of inside jobs. And so that's not to say it didn't happen. Did it? Maybe. Who knows? I don't know to this day that other event, if that one where they lost $1 million. I never followed through with the investigation, but I just dealt with it purely because I got called into it. So I don't even know if it was in the news. But usually a lot of the stuff, they'll pick and choose what they put. Yes, it depends. Most of the stuff will show up in the local news. It was only for a smaller. It wasn't a really big city. But I was actually called into the job to track down and get as much information on the details as possible. And this wasn't even super complicated. Have an officer from the bank call and verify a transaction over a specified amount of money, or if something looks suspicious. The bank didn't see anything suspicious. Sometimes the banks, if you withdraw or you send money that's over an amount that based upon your history, your bank will stop and say, they'll put a hold on it, and then you have to call in and verify. And also, none of these processes were in place, so for whatever reason, but it was an expensive learning lesson.
Yeah, that's a good point. I have one question for you I'd like to ask. You've worked with lots of people, and if you could tell everyone out there just one thing that they could do, what you think the most important thing they could do to keep themselves secure, what do you wish everybody would do?
Keep yourself secure from, as far as IT related, do a little Google search, and you can get lots of checklists that are very user-friendly, very down-to-earth, layman's terms, very easy to understand. There's lots of information out there, like 14 steps, 10 steps how to secure my home environment, 10 steps to set up my home environment, 10 steps for best practices of working from home. So, you know, just talk to Google as you would talk to another person and ask them a question. And that's a great place to start. And that's what I would suggest.
Ask questions. Be curious. Trust nothing. Trust nobody. Because they definitely will take advantage. Well, that sounds good. Blake, BJ, do you guys have anything else you want to add?
Oh, this is a great stopping point because now Dwight's got the wheels in my head turning about this owning of data thing. And now my mind just went down a rabbit hole. So
yeah, I watched that documentary you're talking about, Blake. It's on Netflix. It's about Cambridge Analytical, I think.
Craig brought that to my attention and that startled me, but it didn't startle me to the depth that I'm feeling startled right now. Because I'm like, wait a minute, your data really does define you as a person. And now they have the ability to use machine learning to figure out at a very deep level what the data points mean. And then people talking about metaverse, there's a lot of danger there. They could try to mimic someone's, whatever you want to call it, personality, essence, whatever you want to call it, because the data points that can be found through the application of deep machine learning algorithms, that's, now we're getting into owning data could be a moral question now.
Oh, it is. I'd say it already is.
I used to just think of it along the lines of privacy, and I never really cared myself personally, because for me, privacy is not a big deal, because just for me personally, but this is a whole nother can, because it goes beyond privacy, because now it's like, what can they do with that data that they air quotes own, because it's a replica of me. That data is an output of me, of my essence.
Yeah.
That's scary to think about.
It is scary. It freaks me out every time I think about it. I just need to get off social media. It just sucks because I've lived in so many places and I know so many people.
Well, people should own their own data. That's the thing. No one should own your data because your data is a digital copy of you.
You don't own it. You give it away.
Yeah. So that literally, essentially, it's almost like they've carbon copied everyone in a digital format. And then you don't own that copy of yourself now.
No. And this is exactly what Edward Snowden tried to warn us about. back in the day. This is the exact same. Have you read his book yet, BJ? It's really good.
No, I didn't. I remember watching the movie years ago and I thought it was wow. That's wow.
The book's even better, I would say.
I'm sure. Yeah. The whole thing is very alarming when you trace it all the way from what we learned from Snowden. And then you take it to present day, you have Facebook and having literally everyone's data to a degree that we probably can't fathom, because Facebook announced a few months ago that they were going to have the world's largest supercomputer here by this summer or something. And so the possibilities of what they could do with that data, and then reading the articles about the borderline obsessiveness of this metaverse thing, it's just getting a little bit strange. The whole thing's getting a bit strange. I don't know if you guys saw it, but the employees of Facebook, they had a nickname for Mark Zuckerberg, and it was something about the Eye of Sauron or something. And what is all this? What's really going on?
Some people, when they get too rich, they get too much money, they live in a world that's totally out of this world.
Well, power corrupts too. Just mathematically, if power corrupts, then the only solution is in being incorruptible. So if something's not incorruptible, you should expect a total corruption of it then. Anyway, thanks, Dwight, for now giving me even more things to not sleep over at night.
We have gone down for hours. It's hard to stop once we get started. But yeah, there's a lot of things out there to think about.
Rabbit hole avoided.
Yeah, now it puts it in perspective for me. You guys know that I've been following that project on Web3, Skynet, on the Saya blockchain. And the guy who developed it, the lead developer, David Vorick, I never understood, because he's always drilling all the time. On this, you own your data. Users own their own data. They own their own data. And I'm just like, big deal. Who cares? But now I'm like, oh my God, the light bulb just went off. I always thought, why is he making such a big point of that? I don't care about that. You know what I mean? I want other things about it. But now I'm like, oh wow, that is a big deal.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, great talk, guys.
Yeah, we could definitely talk about big data. But thank you, Dwight. I really do hope that you're able to join us often.
I will make my best effort.
It's great to have a different perspective on it, too. It's nice to have a technical perspective.
And that's exactly the gap that needs to be filled, is the understanding between IT and cyber. They're coming from two totally different angles. And as that gap is filled and people start to understand things more, then we'll value cybersecurity better the more we understand IT.
And I think, like I said, different perspectives are good, because we get an understanding of each other and the way people look, everyone looks at the world differently. And then it's also educational for us, because we don't become narrow-minded and we become open-minded, and we're willing to think and absorb other people's thoughts and ideas. At the end of the day, we make our own decisions, which is what we're going to do, but at least we're educated. And if we're open, then we got all the information we need. And with that, I'll have to leave you.
Beautiful note to leave it on. All right. Thanks again for joining, and we'll talk tomorrow.
Okay.
Absolutely. See you guys.
All right. Bye, guys.
Thanks for listening to the Cybersecurity and Compliance Podcast with Craig Petronella. For other episodes and more information, visit PetronellaTech.com. Also visit our other websites, ComplianceArmor.com and BlockchainSecurity.com. Don't forget to like and subscribe. Thanks for listening, and stay secure.